Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Okay, welcome to the podcast. Very happy to have Dan Hanford with us today. Dan Hanford is a managing partner of PassiveInvesting.com, an apartment syndication that has a little over $130 million in assets, a little over 1,300 doors, and he's also the founder of Multifamily Investor Nation, which is a nationwide group of over 9,000 elite multifamily investors. So Dan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much, Devin, for having me on. Looking forward to it today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And just to kind of kick it off here, where in the country are you located, just so people have kind of a sense?
Sure. So I'm over here in the Southeast in Columbia, South Carolina. And so we're active in this in the Southeast, primarily in the Carolinas, but also in Georgia, Florida. And we also have some assets in Texas as well.
Okay, great. Yeah. So it's pretty well spread out. Well, that's good. I like to just kind of put that out there in case folks want to connect. Meetup is a good way to connect. You know, face to face is the best way we can network. Obviously there's lots of tools here. And let's kind of dive into that. I want to touch on there's many aspects to Multifamily Investor Nation, which is really just snowballed since you started at what, mid 2018?
Yeah, it was actually the latter part of 2018, like October, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so you've got this really interesting model where instead of kicking off a meetup in your backyard and trying to get 5, 10, 20 folks out there to talk about multifamily, you said, let's do this on a national level and let's have chapters locally. So I think the, you know, Multifamily Investor Nation is like you said, 9,000 members now. That's huge. Talk to us a little bit about the structure of that and maybe how somebody could participate and what are the benefits in that meetup group.
Sure. I mean, I think that meetup groups are a great opportunity and a great avenue for being able to, you know, network in person and be able to show up and also create that authority in your local market. And so one of the things that I did to have more of an authority brand around the entire country is I created this group called the Multifamily Investor Nation. It actually started on the meetup platform, started with 1, 2, 3, 4 groups and then quickly expanded. And right now we have 50 groups and looking to double that by the end of 2019. And the whole purpose of the groups is to be able to create those opportunities for networking in person. But there's a couple of things that we've kind of found out along the way, which I think might be helpful to some of your audience, is to kind of learn, you know, what are some strategies that we're using now and doing in our meetup. So if you want to do your own meetup, you can. But if you're interested in, you know, helping us with our groups and you want to be one of our co-organizers, you know, you can obviously, you know, reach out to me and let me know that and be glad to have you as part of it. I can kind of go over a couple of things with you that, you know, I feel like is a very important piece to the structure of a meetup. So obviously, you know, when you think about a meetup, you have to think about the location. And so one of the things that we try to do is to try to find a location for the meetup that is convenient. You know, it's convenient to the masses, if you will. And so sometimes it's hard to do that because sometimes you might pick a location and you don't get the very high attendance that you're looking for. And so you might go, well, let's just try a different area. But you got to be willing to change the location to figure out which one's the best, you know, location. Because sometimes the locations are better to be where there's a lot of, you know, working population. And then there's sometimes it's better to be in a population or in an area where there's more, you know, where people are living. So you either go to where they work or you go to where they live or find that sweet spot in the middle so that you can kind of get the best of both worlds. Because obviously when you're doing a meetup, you're going to get a lot of people that register and you're not going to get that many people to show up.
Sure. Now,
it's just kind of the dynamic of online meetup, not online meetups, but in online registration for a meetup, you'll get 30, 40, 50 people to register and only say 10 to 15 people show up. You know, and so you have to figure out, is it because of the dynamics of the location, or maybe it's just that they, you know, aren't feeling like they're sticky enough to your group, if you will.
So, right.
There's a couple of flaws that I think we made in the very beginning, which, you know, it will hopefully help you or your audience is, you know, when we first started doing the meetups, my goal was just to create some informal networking opportunities, make it as easy as possible for our co-organizers. They don't have to worry about getting speakers or teaching any content. It's just, hey, let's just get together at a Panera Bread is usually where we went. Let's just get together at a Panera Bread, just talk multifamily. And although that sounds really good, you know, it worked out really well, but the problem as far as like getting the co-organizers to go on board with that and stuff like that, because it was an easy button to push, the stickiness of the group really wasn't there. And so one of the things that we found after talking with our, we actually with Meetup, because we have so many groups, we have an actual dedicated representative that works with us. And so she mentioned, she said, well, have you ever thought about making sure you have some sort of educational component to it? And I said, well, I've thought about that, but I just haven't had the time to put it together. And so one of the things that we're developing right now, which will actually be launched in May of 2019, is we're launching a content platform and a content calendar for our co-organizers so that we can, you know, have them jump on a webinar with us virtually. And we've put together every month a one-sheeter around a particular topic in multifamily. And we can teach them on that topic, all of our co-organizers. And then that co-organizer can take that one sheet, you know, make copies of it if they want to, and present it to present it to their group once a month. So now that there is actually a content component to it, so you have the networking plus the content or the education piece to it, and that keeps people coming back for the next one. So when they come in for May, you're like, all right, we talked about, you know, financing, you know, this month, and next month we're going to be going over, you know, things to look for in the due diligence process. And so it keeps people interested and wanting to come back more and more and more and more. And so those are the kind of things that we're working on right now and implementing to kind of make it the Multifamily Investor Nation group of meetups even more powerful than just having just some of these informal networking opportunities.
Yeah, that's such a great point. So full disclosure, I am a co-host in San Antonio, right? It's my market. And so I had signed up with you a few months back, and then I noticed I wasn't getting anything done with it. So I said, you know what, I'm going to bring on a good friend of mine and business partner who has less experience in the multifamily world, but he's very eager to kind of get going and get plugged in. I said, hey, why don't you help me with this meetup that we're going to do? And that way it's not just me trying to wrangle it all. And one of the first things we did was, let's just pick a topic, right? Just to, for people, just a hook for people to have something more than just, hey, we're going to get together. And it was very well attended. I think we had 23 people come out, and a lot of those were kind of personal invites. But the fact that you guys are kind of laying the groundwork for content moving forward, I completely agree that that's going to be a hook for people to, if nothing else, for people to just to have a reason to show up other than, hey, we're just going to kind of stand around a network, which for some people they love, and some people it's very difficult for them. So you bake in some content. I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys roll out, because that makes it easier for us as co-hosts here in San Antonio to just say, hey, we have a content calendar baked and we can start putting them on the calendar and getting folks out. So I think it's a great move building that out.
Schedule out all of them. And you know, the other kind of piece to what we've learned too is that just like what you just did was of getting somebody else to help you with it. You know, one of the things that our meetup pro rep told us is they said, you need to make sure you have at least two, but like better to have like maybe three or four co-organizers for each group, because there might be a time where you might not be able to show up, but they can show up, or, you know, various things like that. And so it creates a lot less, you know, responsibility, if you will, or pressure on the main co-organizer, if you will, if you all three or four share that responsibility of, hey, let's make sure we're there and presenting the information and the content to our group on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's such a great point. We had kind of done some redundancy with two people, but for continuity and for everything else and for less stress on me, that's a great point. Add another couple of folks in there. I mean, what I've found is there's really no limit to the amount of folks that are interested in this and want to learn versus, you know, there's all kind of coaching and education you can pay for, but this is a very easy first step to at least dip your toe in the water of multifamily and get an understanding without some big financial commitment, right?
So, you know, I have two other things that I'll share with this, because we've just been thinking about this a lot over the last several weeks. So you kind of caught me at the right time here, Devin, talking about the sure. meetups.
Good.
But one of the other pieces to these meetups to make sure that they're successful is making sure that there's some consistency with it.
Right.
Not only consistency in, you know, the frequency of like once a month or once every other week or whatever the frequency may be. You know, we usually recommend at least once a month, but having it be the same day or the same time of every month. So instead of just saying like the first of every month, you know, doing like picking the day of the week and saying, all right, it's going to be the first Friday of every month or the last Friday of every month or the first, you know, Tuesday of every month. And it's always at the same on the same day. So people can plan that out on their calendar throughout the entire year. And that way, right, they already are planned. They don't have to go to the meetup platform to kind of figure out what the times are. They just know automatically, and they just go ahead and, you know, reserve those spots, and then it's on their calendar every single year.
Yeah, that's a great point. And if you do have some redundancy in terms of co-hosts, then if you've got to miss two out of a year, that's okay. You know, you've got some backup there. So that's a great, great plan.
So the last thing that I'll mention about this, and then we can move on to the next topic that you might have, is, I know we're just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze here, having a conversation. So one of the things that I've thought about doing, and maybe you can give me some feedback, Devin, is, you know, obviously when you're putting on some meetups and you're doing it in venues like hotel conference rooms and stuff like that, they're not usually very expensive, but in reality, they kind of are when you're doing 50 of them, right?
Sure.
So, you know, we just did one in Raleigh last night, actually. I just drove up there to Raleigh and did one, and did a workshop, had 35 people register, and I had like, I think 15 people show up, which actually was a pretty good attendance for only 35 registering.
Sure.
But we had 15 people show up, but the conference room cost me $200.
Right.
And so nobody paid for that event, but I went there and shared about how to legally raise money with your, for your multifamily deals. That was a little workshop that I've been doing lately, and got a lot of great feedback from it. But one of the things that I thought about was, is I wonder if you could like work with these hotels to say, all right, if we every month come in on this particular day, instead of paying 200, could we maybe pay 75 or 100 or whatever and try to get a little bit better rate? But then in order for the co-organizers to afford to pay that, because I can't afford to sit there and pay, you know, all those fees every single month for, you know, all 50 groups and eventually 100 groups as we grow. But to be able to charge a small nominal fee as like a yearly membership for people who come in. So the first one, they can come in, it's no charge. They can get to kind of experience the group, learn a little bit about it. But then they pay like a small fee, like, you know, $50, $100, something like that. And they can get access to maybe some of the recordings that we have for that, you know, for that, for the content for the prior couple of months or whatever. But then they also get access to come in to all the future events as well. And it just helps to pay for some of the expenses.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And I've considered the same thing for two reasons. One, to offset some nominal expenses. You know, we had ours in San Antonio. The last one was at my office, which is also a house, which makes for pretty good entertaining. And we bought some sandwiches. And at some point I said, hey, there's beer in the fridge. So I guess we had beers too. So it wasn't free to host it. But I like a nominal fee for two reasons. One, to help offset some costs. But two, if somebody is investing, and I'm talking about $50 here, not a big amount of money, but I think the likelihood of them showing up is just going to be higher, right? They've made a commitment to it. And then then this is not a wholesaling meetup. This is not a no money down, get rich overnight type of real estate thing. This is multifamily investing. There's, you know, typically certain kind of profile of folks that are showing up to these things, a little bit different than maybe some of the no money down crowd that some of the other meetups might attract. So I think a nominal fee might kind of discourage some of the some of those folks that really don't have an interest in multifamily from showing up. So I like it. I think it's worth looking into.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad I validated it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like anything, we kick it around all we want and then go test it in the real world. And that'll tell you how it really works. You know?
That's right. But, we'll have to test it out. And then I'll probably test it out. Maybe like just some of the local groups that I have here, you know, just to kind of see what kind of response I get and if anybody actually registers or pays for it, and then kind of roll it out nationally in the next couple of months.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. So those of you listening, if you're interested in maybe starting a chapter in your city, now a lot of the cities, there's chapters already started. I know, I think in some of the larger metros, you guys are having maybe multiple, and I'm sure there's plenty of cities that you haven't got to yet, right? So there's plenty of opportunity there.
Oh yeah, there's lots of opportunity, and you know, even like, you know, larger markets like the Dallas-Fort Worth market, and you know, even LA and stuff like that. There's always going to be multiple groups meeting around the same time. We need to have like those two or three or four people that can help co-organize each one of those groups. So the more people we can have participate, the better it is. So if you're interested in doing that, you know, just like Devin did, you can reach out to me. Just shoot me over an email, dan@passiveinvesting.com, and you know, just let me know that you're interested in starting a meetup, or you know, being a co-organizer in one of your local meetups that you have there locally. And we'd be glad to jump on a call with you and have you join us on some of our future webinars that are just for our co-organizers.
Yeah, that's great. Great opportunity. And kudos on snagging passiveinvesting.com. I can't imagine that one was just sitting out there for sale on GoDaddy, right?
Probably took a little thing. Definitely paid a nice penny for it. Undisclosed amount, but we did.
Sure. Well, hey, that is a heck of a handle to build a brand around. So that's good. So let's kind of shift focus a little bit into your syndication business. You know, I know you've got some partners there and you guys are out there buying deals, you know, over 1300 units. You said you had one more kind of in the pipeline. What does the business look like today? How are you guys structured, I guess, among the, you know, principals, and what are you guys out there looking for?
Well, you know, when you first get started in the multifamily space, you know, you always hear this thing of, you know, build your team. And when you think about your team, most people think of your lenders and your brokers and your attorneys and, you know, various things like that. And all that is really good. But I think it's also, you know, you need to be looking at, you know, trying to bring people on that can help support and balance you to allow you to be able to grow and scale.
Right.
And so I, in the beginning, wasn't really looking for anybody, but my two partners, Brandon Abbott and Danny Randazzo, came along after they saw some of the things that I was doing and really wanted to, you know, partner up with me. And actually, Brandon Abbott actually goes to my church. And so we've been going to church together for a couple of years. And I kind of knew what he did in property and casualty and doing insurance adjusting and stuff like that. But I didn't really know what level of knowledge he had around, you know, multifamily and stuff like that. And he had done a several estimates and stuff like that for the property and casualty space in that realm. I started to talk to him about some of the stuff that I was doing. And, you know, about a month after having that conversation with him, he reached out to me and said, "Hey, I don't want to get out of this property and casualty stuff. Can I just join you?" I said, "Yeah, but I'm not going to pay you, but you can be a partner." And so he was willing to take that leap and to do that and to trust the system, trust the process. And so he's now a full partner with us, and we don't pay him a salary or anything like that. But he quit his job completely and is now working with us full time. And then Danny Randazzo came reaching out to me and said, "Hey, you know, I'd like to be your finance piece and your underwriting piece. And, you know, you go out and, you know, reach the investors and bring in the equity portion of it." And so It was kind of like a marriage made in heaven, if you will, because I like the underwriting piece after it's done. Like, I like to look and analyze it, pull it apart, but I don't like the minutia of pulling all the numbers over and everything.
Takes a special person.
But he loves that stuff, man. He's like, he loves the numbers so much. And I kind of tell us all the time, but the IRR calculation, you just do that in a spreadsheet, right? Not right, him. He likes to do it longhand. You know, like, I don't have any reason to do that. he doesn't do it all the time longhand. But when he first started, you know, really diving into the calculation, he told me, he said, "I wanted to understand the calculation, so I wanted to do it longhand first." So he went out and actually did it longhand. But he's a good balance to our team because we have the, you know, my side, which is the investor relations and the marketing piece. And then we have Brandon, who is our construction and acquisition lead. So he's the one that does all of our deal, you know, slicing, if you will. Are we going to look at this deal? Are we not going to look at this deal? And when we do, you know, we have a process in place where it goes over to Danny. He does an initial basic underwriting on it and then sends it back to Brandon and says, "Hey, yeah, let the numbers look superficially good. Go tour it." And then he'll go set up the meeting with the tour with the broker and go tour the property. And if while he's on site, he's like, "Yeah, I think this is a potential possibility," then, you know, he'll take a lot more measurements and does 3D modeling of the interior and the exterior of the building. Also throws a drone up in the air, can get really close to the shingles and kind of see what the age of the roof might be.
Sure.
So also, because of his background in property and casualty, you know, he had to do that in the past where he had to actually estimate the age of a roof and because there was hail damage and stuff like that. So he has all that knowledge and background to be able to help us. So we actually have him do what we call our pre-LOI inspection. So before we even do an LOI on it, we kind of already know what to expect during the inspection after we get it under contract in our due diligence period. So he basically gives us a little bit more confidence as we're putting up some earnest money deposit that might go hard day one when we're getting into a project, or that might go hard after the due diligence. We kind of have a little more confidence going into the project. Then once he's done with it, he sends us all of his information over to Danny. He does the full underwriting analysis on it. And then we all three get together after that's done and, you know, kind of pull apart the underwriting even more. And I look at it from the investor's lens because that's kind of my background is as the investor, or, you know, relations piece to it. You know, investors won't like this. They won't like this. Oh, this looks good, or that doesn't look good. And we need to kind of, you know, make it look like it's going to be make it look more presentable to the investors. Meaning, you know, we had a project recently that we did that had a 35% IRR once we put in our standard like template numbers. And of course, we're all excited about that. But I'm like, guys, investors are not going to believe that. know, so we have to make it even more conservative than we already had it to make it a little more, realistic. And it's just made for an even more conservative deal.
Yeah, that's right. That's interesting, right? I mean, you show somebody an 8% cash on cash return, they go, oh, that's very interesting. I'll take a look. You show somebody a 15% cash on cash return, they're going to go, or people that are experienced are going to go, you're crazy. You missed something in your numbers. Get out of here, right?
There's a scam going on here.
yeah. So it's kind of counterintuitive. Very good problem to have to say, hey, let's bump up our exit cap a little bit more to get these numbers in line with what people expect. And then you leave yourself plenty of runway to over deliver, which is just a fantastic position to be in when you can get it. So that's good. I like how you've segmented the responsibilities, because I think people getting started, there's so much work to be done, and there's very different skill sets on the finance side and, let's say, investor relations. You know, some people might hate the idea of going out and talking to somebody about investing $100,000 in a deal. Some people love that stuff. I love that stuff, right? I'm investor relations just kind of naturally. You are too. I've learned the finance side and I understand it, but it's really kind of more of a chore. So we brought in a third party underwriter to do all that work, because I was getting deals backed up on my desk that we weren't getting a look at, because I just, you know, the idea of trying to pull apart a messy T12 and reclassify it all is just like, oh man. But there are folks that love that stuff. So nice work kind of building the team so that everybody's playing to their strengths or their background and can go roll it out. And so you guys are really just now looking at everything you can and trying to buy anything that makes sense, or are you just trying to take it one deal at a time, or what's the strategy for the firm?
Yeah. So we're pretty focused on our criteria. So we have very, strict criteria, if it goes outside of that criteria, even by one unit, we don't look at it. Cause if you start to look at everything, then you start to get watered down and you start to lose your focus. And, our criteria is very specific to a specific, class of product and a specific vintage of product. And, if it doesn't fit that criteria, we don't look at it, but we're primarily right now looking in the Carolinas and it's primarily because there's been a lot of deal flow coming out of it. So we've acquired some assets in Greenville, South Carolina. We've offered some in Columbia, South Carolina, which is where I'm located, as well as Charleston. And then, of course, Charlotte and Raleigh we really like as well. Haven't gotten anything in those markets yet, but still, trying to analyze the deals that come out of those particular markets as well.
Are you guys able to leverage one management company across those? Do you prefer to use multiple third-party management companies, or what's the strategy with the management?
Yeah. So all of the ones that are in a particular locale, we try to, keep with the same property management company, because it does help us from a communication standpoint.
Sure.
Especially when you can use like one regional for, multiple assets, instead of having to have, five different regionals with five different companies. And so we do try to keep the same property management company, but, one of the things that we've considered as a group is that as we scale and get more units into one location, probably a minimum at least 1,000 units into one location, we will most likely consider bringing on our own BP of operations to be able to do some of that property management ourselves. But that's definitely something we've considered, but we haven't actually gone down that road yet, because I think the biggest reason is that one of the missing components to a lot of the property management companies that are out there right now is their lack of technology and their use of technology.
Interesting.
So
right.
One of the unique things about our group is that we can reduce a lot of expenses on our properties because of our leveraging of technology.
Yeah, that's such a great point. We have a process in our company that any process, kind of goes through three stages. And the first stage is, can we eliminate it, right? If this process is the first stage, can we eliminate it? Potentially, we can. And then the second stage is, can we automate it? And a lot of times with software automation, you can reduce a lot of cycles through software automation. And the third step would just be to delegate it to somebody to get it off of my plate or somebody on my team's plate. But tons of opportunity with technology and resident portals and things like that to streamline all that. Mm-hmm. So do you guys think you would build out the whole management company at some kind of unit threshold? Is that on the table for consideration?
Yes, we've definitely considered it. We haven't made any final decisions on it, because when we've kind of looked at the numbers, on a very high level, it doesn't really make sense unless they have at least like a minimum 1,000 units in one market that you can actually afford to hire somebody to manage that piece of it. Because I have no desire, Devin, to have a property management company. I would only want to have more control over it. And so to be able to hire somebody to actually run that piece of it and then report back to us is really what we would like to see. But right now, we're not even worrying about that. It's just kind of on the horizon that, yes, when we get to that point, we will cross that bridge when we get there. But we'll make sure that we have certain things in place so that it's not distracting us and taking our focus away from what we're really good at, which is acquiring these really solid, you know, cash flowing assets.
Yeah, that's right. And leveraging third party at kind of the stage starting out and where you guys are at, sure makes things easy and quick to scale, that you don't have to build all the HR systems and the hiring and everything.
Absolutely. You know, and the bookkeeping.
I mean, the whole thing is they do so much work. The folks that I know, friends of mine that are, vertically integrated and they do run the management company, they're not doing it for the money, right? It's all about the control, right? Because a 3 or 4% of revenue, you know, it's just not a huge amount of money coming in. But if you're going to get a certain measure of control out of it, it's going to improve your net operating income, then it could be worth it. But I'm in the same boat. I don't have a desire to own a management company. I have talked to some friends that as their portfolios have scaled, they've bought a stake in a management company, or they've, you know, started one or partnered with somebody to start one so that they don't necessarily have to do a lot of the day-to-day. But if you've got 5,000 units, you might as well own a piece of the management company that's running.
That's very true.
Yeah. Lots of ways to skin the cat, though. That's for sure. Let's talk a little bit about Multifamily Investor Nation and the summit. So I think last year was kind of the inaugural kickoff, right? Mm-hmm. And this was, I'll just kind of highlight it, but basically I go to conferences, you go to conferences. Conferences are a great way to network and meet with folks. There's airfare, there's a hotel, there's, you know, 3 days away from the family, whatever it is. But hopefully those things pay off in terms of relationships and education. The way you structured it was virtually. And I even had some folks reach out to me and go, "What? I want to go. Where is it?" And well, you know, it's kind of wherever you want it to be. So talk about the genesis of that, because it's a pretty novel concept. And you know, how did you come up with that? And then what's on tap for the next, round two of Multifamily Investor Nation?
Yeah, it's funny. Before I dive into that, to answer your question, it was kind of funny you mentioned about the location, because we had one person ask for a refund, and it was a guy that the Tuesday before the event started, he asked for a refund, stated that we never gave him the location. And we were like, well, it's online and it's virtual. Right. And if you just now on Tuesday before the event decided to figure out where the location was, you might be a little behind anyway, because if you wanted to really fly to Columbia, South Carolina, to sit in my office while I did the virtual event, you'd had to plan probably a little bit more than just Tuesday before.
It can be an expensive flight, right?
Yes, it would be a very expensive flight. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of funny. But So I actually, you know, I have, I interviewed somebody on my podcast. So I have an entrepreneur podcast that my wife and I have been doing now. And it's a daily podcast, and we interview entrepreneurs from around the world. And I interviewed this one entrepreneur that, you know, kind of talked about, you know, his experience with putting on a live event and not in the worry of not getting enough attendees and paying all these, you know, hotel fees and $150 a gallon for coffee and, you know, all this extra stuff. And then
cost? I never looked at the numbers. I've never put on an event.
It depends on the hotel. It's pretty expensive. It's like ridiculous to try to bake in like the service charges and right. stuff like that. I got just in Raleigh, I paid $200, but they charged 22% as a service charge on top of that. And I'm like, for what? Like, I don't understand what they did other than set the chairs up, you know, and
brought
water in the room. And that was it.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, don't get me started on that piece of it. But because he actually did, he kind of launched into this whole, like, you know, reasons why he didn't want to do the live events anymore. And so he came up with this idea of trying to do a virtual event. And he started to talk to me about it. And I said, I need to get you on another podcast where I want to dive deeper on that. And so I invited him 2 weeks later to another episode. And he graciously came on, and basically for like an hour, I told him, I said, just so you know, this is going to be a selfish episode, because I'm basically going to, you know, pick your brain on everything you're doing, and I'm just going to copy it and do it for, you know, multifamily. Because I was like, no one's doing that in multifamily.
Nope.
And I think I could probably do that. And so after that episode, I made the decision and set the date. And it was 2 months prior to the last event, which the last event was in January 15th, somewhere around there, 16th, 17th, 18th, or 17th, 18th, 19th, in January 2019. I had 2 months to promote it. And wow. So I wanted to get it done in December, but the guy I was talking to on the podcast, he's like, no, you need to push it off till at least, you know, probably at least February. And I was like, I don't want to wait till February. So I set the dates in January. and just started, I was reaching out to people and saying, hey, would you be interested in speaking? This is what it is. In the beginning, I had to have a lot of explanation because they were like, virtual, online, what do you mean? What are you doing? Like, how are you going to do it? And so I had to explain a little bit more about that. But being able to, reach out to a lot of the relationships that I had built in multifamily and just inviting some of these high level speakers to come on and share their experience and share their knowledge in a massive format. And my goal, honestly, was to get 1,000 attendees. And I didn't do that, but I had 2 months to promote it and I had 586 attendees. So I feel like it was still a great success.
No doubt.
The next one, though, I want to double it. So I want to have at least 1,000 on the next one. And so we're constantly trying to do some more promotionals and marketing. And even the reason why I was able to do that, even just in those short 2 month period of time, because that was also during Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, that we were doing all these promotionals.
Tough time to promote. Yep.
It was a tough time. And but what I did was, I started to take all the money I was making off of the ticket sales, just pouring it back into the marketing, because my goal wasn't to make a bunch of money off the event. My goal was to increase the reach of my own brand of Multifamily Investor Nation, and also to be able to expand my passive investor network and database.
Right.
And my database grew exponentially during that time, that 2 month period of time. And it's allowed us to be able to, raise more money and allowed us to be able to expand our network and all that. And every event now that I go to, it's like live and in person, it's hard for me to even just go to the bathroom because people, oh, hey, thanks for putting on that event. It was great. You did a great job. Sure. Just want to come and shake your hand and meet you. And so people already, know me now. So I get to, it kind of builds that credibility even more when you start to, present a deal to your investors.
Yeah, now that makes perfect sense. And the scalability, I imagine, if at 500 some odd attendees versus 1,000, in terms of the back end infrastructure and the setup, there's not a whole lot more there, right? Or am I missing something?
No, you basically just have to go into the Zoom platform we use and just pay the extra fees. That's pretty much it.
Sure.
And
sure.
The funny thing is that we actually had to do that for the first event, but I didn't realize I had to do it until we started the event. And we had people like emailing my assistant saying, hey, I'm getting kicked off. The maximum that they can be in a room is like 100 attendees. So what do we do? And so I had to go on there and pay an extra fee. I think it was like instead of like $100 a month, it might be like, $300 or $400 a month or whatever it is. So
right.
I had to pay that. And it's funny because right after the event, I was like, well, I don't need it for another like 5 months. So there's no sense of paying that ongoing monthly fee. So I just backed it down to the normal plan. And then of course my Zoom, rep reached out to me and said, hey, did something go wrong? What happened? And I was like, no, I only needed it for 3 days.
Right.
So just kind of backed it down after that. So, but the technology side of things is not that hard to scale because it's really just, the Zoom platform is what's using most of the bandwidth and the technology and all that kind of stuff. And we had a flawless event in January. Didn't lose internet, didn't lose connectivity, but there were a couple of scary times the week before that I thought that it might have an issue, but during the event it actually did very well.
Yeah, that's usually the opposite, where everything's great before and then it tanks during the event. And so kudos for pulling that off. I was grateful, was grateful to be invited as a speaker and grateful, I was like, hey, I'm going to a conference here. I'm going to watch some speakers. I'm going to speak. I'm going to network with some folks here kind of virtually, and no plane, no hotel, and I'm going to be home this weekend. It was pretty cool. And so I think the model definitely works for, look, we're all busy. A lot of us have kids and everything. So that model fits right in to be able to get a lot of the benefits and the networking out of it virtually. So looking forward to more of those events. What's the next one coming up, Dan?
It's actually coming up in June. So June 27th, 28th, and 29th. And it's going to be same thing, 3 days online. It's not, none of the speakers are pre-recorded. So they all have to come in live where they're broadcasting from around the world. So, last time we had people from the Bahamas and Israel and, Canada and Australia. They're just all over the place. That's the nice thing about doing it virtually is that they can come from all over. And we had people from, I think, 8 or 9 different countries actually tuning in at the same time. So it was really kind of cool to kind of see everybody from around the world being able to kind of watch the event going on live. And there's a couple of things we're doing differently, though. So, you know, last time we had 60 speakers, we'll have 60 plus speakers this time. We're also bringing on some sponsors for this one. I didn't have enough time and a lead time to be able to put together any sponsorship packages for the last time. So we do have some of those spots available for some people. But we also are, instead of being just kind of like a hodgepodge of content, we're doing categorical, you know, topics so that if somebody like says, hey, I want to know all about, you know, due diligence. Well, there's going to be a category of due diligence sessions, and none of those due diligence sessions will overlap with each other, because with the virtual event, we actually run two rooms simultaneously, and you can right. jump between each one of those rooms. And last time there were some speakers that, and there will probably be some speakers that will overlap that somebody wants to listen to both of them. But most of the all the content categories won't overlap each other. So if somebody says, hey, I want to watch all the raising capital and I want to watch all of the, you know, the financing, the due diligence ones, they won't run overlapping each other. But all of the sessions are recorded. So anybody who does miss one, or they can't get off work for a day or whatever, all those sessions will be recorded. And so they can go back and watch them for up to 4 months after the event. And then one of the most beneficial things about this event, which is really cool for anybody who's looking for, you know, people to partner with or to continue the networking and also to find some passive investors for their future projects, is that we give all of the paid attendees access to the contact database. You get the name and the email of all of the attendees, so you can actually reach out to them after the event and try to build up your database. Just that in and of itself is worth the fee you pay for the actual event itself.
Yeah, 100%. And that's not even something that I've ever gotten at any event that I've attended in person, right? So now you have to treat that respectfully. And I know you guys have some guidelines around that. You know, you've got to kind of reach out one-on-one. You can't just throw people in a database, which is the way it should be, but there's a tremendous opportunity. And I completely agree that it's worth the cover charge right there just for that piece, let alone all the content and everything. So, yep. Definitely worth checking that out. So I'm looking forward to the next event in June. I believe that you guys invited me back. I guess I didn't stink it up too bad the first time around, because your sister reached out. Invited me back. So had a blast last time. Looking forward to the next one. What do you recommend for kind of shifting gears? I mean, you guys are really growing the business. You've got the right team in place, and you've got a good system to go out and acquire these deals and kind of throw them over into the asset management pool and just run the deals. What do you recommend for somebody that's starting in the business? You know, they have an interest in being the lead sponsor on a deal, but they don't have any experience. What would you say to that person that wants to get going as a multifamily syndicator?
I think one of the first things that they should do is become educated around the space, you know, because sure. you have to be able to learn and understand and speak the language. I call it kind of the foreign language of multifamily, so right. that you can start to talk intelligently with other people about it. That's the first step, you know. And I have, you know, lots of books that around multifamily that I recommend. Multifamily Millions by David Lindahl is one of the first ones that I've read. Right. Also, Wheelbarrow of Profits by Jake and Gino's group is a great book to read. And then my mentor, Joe Fairless, just wrote a book a couple of months ago called The Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book. So those three books in and of itself will give you a lot of insights and a lot of background knowledge about, you know, everything from, you know, getting started, you know, underwriting, financing the deal, all the due diligence, all of that stuff. But you need to try to digest as much of that information as possible. And then we'll do basically what I did in the beginning, which is partner with other people that are doing things on a high level or doing things on a level that you want to play in. So if you want to play in the smaller space, there's nothing wrong with that. Find some partners that are playing in that space and join their team and help them out and provide value to them. And then if you want to play in the larger space, you know, you can go and find somebody that you can help partner with, you know, whether it be capital raising or helping with the due diligence and the underwriting, or you know, maybe even doing some property tours for them or kind of doing some recognizance of some of the, you know, markets that they're wanting to invest in. So being able to provide and be a valuable resource to them and jump on their general partnership to be able to be part of some of these deals, kind of see how they're done, and don't be a pain in the rear end with it, but be right. an actual valuable resource. And don't call somebody up. This is one of the things that drives me nuts the most. You probably get it too, Devin, where somebody calls you up and they say, I want to get in this space. How can I help you? And you're like, well, I don't really know. what do you do? Like, what's your background? Like, right. I can't just like tell you what I need, because I don't know what you are good at, you know?
Right.
At this point, usually we'll tell people that, you know, at this point, you know, we're not usually, you know, looking for somebody. We have our team built out. But usually it's the person that after we tell that to them, they call us back or they'll email us and they'll say, hey, would you just call me up whenever you tour another property? Because I just want to be a shadow. I just want to be your shadow. And they'll show up and they'll just be there. And I have two people right now that just anything we do, whether we're on site, whether I'm driving to an event or going to an event, flying to an event, they're always there and they want to know about it. It's because they want to shadow me and they want to shadow our team. And it's not just me. It's just, you know, some people shadow, have one guy that always shadows Brandon. I have another guy that is shadowing Danny. And, you know, they're just being there and being that sponge and just absorbing the information as much as they can.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you've got to get the nomenclature down. You've got to understand these pieces, and it's free to do that. You just provide it, or a nominal charge, buy a $15 book on Amazon and just devour that stuff. Because if you go to talk with a broker and you get one of those terms wrong, people are going to go, do you even know what you're talking about? So that's the education is absolutely the first step. There's a million ways to do it. And then, I always advocate what is the end goal for what anybody's doing? If their end goal is to purchase 150 unit apartment complexes, try to get a tiny little piece of a bigger deal with somebody else so you can kind of watch and learn. And I've seen that process work over and over and over again. That's how I got started in this, is not going to take down a huge deal myself day one. It's, hey, get a little piece of the first deal, get in there, learn, and then start to take on more responsibility in subsequent deals to the point where, you know, you can take down your own deal if that's the end goal. So there's ways in, and it's all about providing value and partnering with people that are already successful. And so kudos to you guys for having done that and built that. Ton of value. Dan, thank you very much for covering all this. There's so much that you guys offer in terms of free content on your podcasts, Multifamily Investor Nation meetups, passiveinvesting.com. If somebody wants to reach out and learn about partnering with you guys, investing with you guys, what's the best place to do that?
Sure. So if you're interested in doing some passive investing with us, obviously passiveinvesting.com is the resource for that. We're in the process of doing a complete redevelopment of that website. So by the time this episode launches, that should be out there as well. So you can check us out there, fill out our investor questionnaire there. Love to jump on a call with you, see if there's something we can do to help you from that standpoint. And then for those of your listeners that are interested in possibly joining us at the summit, they can actually use your first name, Devin, as a promo code, and they'll get $100 off their ticket. So you can go to mfinsummit.com and check out the information there about all the different speakers, including yours truly, Devin Elder.
Very good. Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing with us today. Those of you listening, please reach out, connect with Dan, get in his universe, and you'll be better for it. Dan, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.